I just work here.
Oh, yeah, I know. I was like, what a great, not photogenic photo.
Are we ready? Okay. Are we ready? Okay, good morning. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Woodland Hills. Good morning. Welcome to the meeting of the Board of Recreation and Parks Commission. Today is September 4th, 2025. This board meeting is being conducted in person. All public comments will be taken in person only. And each speaker will be granted a maximum of 2 minutes. Our first order of business is a call for the roll. Takesha, will you please take the roll?
Will do, Madam President. President Semerell.
Present.
Commissioner Tran.
Present.
Commissioner Lloyd.
Present.
And we have quorum, Madam President.
Thank you. Our next order of business is a approval of the minutes from the August 21st, 2025 meeting. May I have a motion to approve the minutes? So moved. May I have a second?
Second.
Takesha, I have a motion and a second to approve the minutes. Can you call for the vote?
Yes, President Semerell, we have a motion and a second to approve the regular minutes from August 21st, 2025. Commissioner Lloyd, how do you vote?
Aye.
Commissioner Tran, how do you vote?
Aye.
President Semerell, how do you vote?
Aye.
And the motion carried.
Thank you. Our
and next... Vice President Sanchez just joined the meeting.
Where?
Right
there. Oh. Hello. And we are expecting also our newest commissioner, Tafari. So hopefully he'll be able to join us today as well. Before we hear from the general manager's update, is someone from Councilmember Bob Blumenfeld's District 3 here with us? Hi, good morning. Okay. Shall we bring up staff for the acknowledgement of Service Mechanical Repair Supervisor Robert Simovich?
Yes. Good morning, everybody. Jimmy Kim, General Manager. I am going to defer to our Chief Financial Officer, Noel Williams, for the acknowledgement of service for our Mechanical Repair Supervisor, Mr. Rob Simovich, who is here with his lovely family.
Good morning, commissioners, recreation and park staff, as well as the listening public. I'm Noel Williams. I'm the chief financial officer for the recreation and parks. Today, I'd like to present to you Mr. Robert Simovich, who after 38 years of service, 39 years of service, decided to...
I tried to get him to stay to 40. It's a much rounder, but he declined.
Yeah, you have no idea. I've been stretching this out for a while. He recently retired. After 40 years, he worked in several departments, including sanitation and GSD and harbor, right? And for the last 22 years, he has been at home at RAP, if you will. I think he always considers this his home department. Of course, we know that's because it's the best. And he is here today with his lovely wife, Carmela, who we have turned over custody to. And the newest addition, Kire, right?
Yeah.
And his wife, or his daughter, Nikki. That's it for the family today, right? There's quite an entourage in the group, but today only a few people can make it. Anyway, I would also just like to say a couple things. Rob has been over our equipment division for and purchasing section for quite some time. I don't think sometimes people realize just how large geographically the department is, and that it's takes a lot of resources to keep it going, not just materials and goods, but equipment and people. Rob has overseen what we like to refer to as our large fleet, which is all the maintenance trucks you see, park rangers, construction, recreation vehicles, and also the small fleet, what we would call our small fleet, which is all the equipment we use to maintain many vehicles. And he also oversaw, but besides a myriad of the duties, our purchasing group, which issues somewhere in the area of 6,000 purchase orders every year. And he's also over lots of other little things that we just kept giving him more and more work. Hopefully he wouldn't retire. I can honestly say that it was a very sad day for me when he retired because he did so much work. But also through the years, I've been here since 2007, I could say Mr. Savanovich, Ms. Savanovich, came to work every day with a smile on his face, every single day, through Great Recession, COVID, you name it. He was there at the site pretty much every day, giving it everything he had. And I think he's worked well within our department. I recently talked to him. He's been traveling, paying in his house all in just a very short period of time. I said, you need to slow down now. You're in retirement mode. But I can honestly say that he's always worked very well with everybody, and he's always, always had the best interests of the department in his thing. I don't know if you want to say a few words.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Noel. Commissioners, Jimmy, Matt, everybody from Rec and Parks. It's just been a great time at Rec and Parks. Like Noel said, I was with a number of other departments, but Rec and Parks always felt like home. Such a great department to work for. And that's why when Noel said, you know, you came to work with a smile on your face all the time, I mean, look what you got to work with. I mean, we do this for the kids out there in the park that, you know, on a Saturday afternoon, play baseball, soccer, whatever they got going on. And that was the fun part, you know, knowing that that was for that. But now it's time to move on. I got two grandkids, two lovely daughters. My other daughter couldn't make it. Other family members, we're doing stuff. So another part of my life, and I'm excited about it. Thank you so much for your support, though.
And we wanted to present Rob with the presentation from the board. He started in December 8, 1986. And Dr. Weld says 38 here, but more than that. And he's had a remarkable career. And I hope that you think of us often. or in a positive way.
Yeah.
You know. And I don't know if we'd like to take some pictures or not. Yeah.
But would any other commissioners like to make a comment? Jimmy?
Yes. Jimmy Kim, General Manager of Recreation Parks. Rob, it's without saying that, thank you for your service to the department. Our path first crossed as an emergency manager many years ago, and you've been nothing but supportive of getting the things that we needed to provide service to the city of Los Angeles. And as I've come up in the department through being a superintendent to an AGM to the GM, your leadership, the department division, as well as our procurement union have been exceptional. You're very hard to replace. As a matter of fact, Noel and I had conversations of what are we going to do already, but it just shows the level of work and service that you provided to the department. So thank you. Enjoy the next chapter in your life. And I'll be there in 7 years. And maybe at that time we could get together and go fishing. That's right.
Or motocross.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yes. And just echoing Jimmy's comments, thank you. 39 years of service to the city and to this department is to be commended, and to do that with a smile you know, lifts my heart because this is the greatest department, I think, in the city, in the work that we do to bring joy, bring belonging, bring connection through the park and recreation system. And so we really appreciate your service and wish you the best of luck in this next chapter in your life.
I wanted to say that Commissioner Bain joined the meeting.
Always be behind.
We'll join next time if we're invited.
And before I turn it over to the councilman, but I just wanted to welcome our newest commissioner, Tafari Bain. Welcome back. It's a pleasure to have you. We look forward to working with you. And to welcome us to the Great Woodland Hills in CD3, Councilmember Blumenfeld. You have to push on this one. Council doesn't, but this one does.
Okay, how about that? Can you hear me now?
Don't worry, Councilmember McCosker messed up too.
All right. Well, it's so nice to see you all and to welcome you to the third council district, which is the West Valley that I represent right here in Woodland Hills. I also represent Tarzana, Reseda, Winnetka, and Canoga Park. I should say to welcome you back. You guys were here 8 years ago when we reopened this park. That was a wonderful day. Derek Fisher, the Lakers came out. We really celebrated. This was one of the first projects when I was elected in 2013 that we really started investing in to get this park. It actually had already been started by my predecessor, and we continued that to bring it to fruition. And the incredible park that you see here is a gem with, you know, solar on the roof and now a year-round pool and an incredible staff, Lee Marks, the whole team over there. They're awesome. So I wanted to be here when you came back here to welcome you and to express my gratitude for all you do as a commission. One of my favorite commissions, as many of you know, my wife was on this commission for a number of years. Rec and Parks is in my blood. Before I was ever elected, I worked for a park agency for the Santa Monica Mountains Conservancy. For years, and we have gotten during my tenure, and now my tenure is getting close to the end. I have about a third left in my last third term, but together as Rec and Parks, we've opened up, you know, five different parks in the district. We've refurbished all sorts of parks and really added to the recreational space in the West Valley, and that's because of the great work that you all have done, whether it's traditional small pocket park like the one we did at the fire station, or what will be a very unique thing that we've been working together on, which is an ice skating rink that's going to open up next year, $30 million first of its kind public ice skating rink. That is, again, Rec and Parks. You guys come through consistently and have done the hard work. So I welcome to the West Valley. I know for some of you it was a drive, but you know, I'm just getting back at you because when I have to go downtown, think of the drive you had here. I have to go downtown an hour and a half to get to City Hall every day. Whereas this park is so close to my house, I can walk here. In fact, this morning, if you guys got here early, you might have seen me jogging around the park with my dogs. I do that as often as I can. And again, this is my most local park that my kids grew up in. And like any park where it serves the families nearby and the entire city. So welcome to the West Valley thank you for coming out here and realizing that we have all the park issues that every other aspect area of the city does, even though people sometimes, you know, don't realize how far the city goes west. We're here, we're proud, it is the best part of the city, although it is also the hottest part of the city. That's another story, but people can cool off by going in the year-round pool or the Reseda pool that we all just extended for another month for this year. So thank you, and everybody here, let's thank Rec and Parks for coming to the West Valley, and appreciate all the work that you do. Have a great meeting.
Thank you, Councilmember, for welcoming us, and thank you for your support of the department, your support for Parks and Recreation, and all you do for not just the residents of the West Valley, but for the city of Los Angeles. Well, with that, we'll move on to General Manager's Update. Mr. Kim?
Good morning, President Cimarron, Commissioner, staff, and members of the public. Jimmy Kim, General Manager. Again, I wanted to also extend my gratitude for the council member for being here today and your support of the department, and importantly, your advocacy to get this swimming pool year-round. We're glad that we're able to do it, and the community is able to, especially being that it's such a hot part of our city, to be able to leverage this amazing swimming pool. So thank you for all your support. I'm going to now bring up our superintendent of the Valley Region, Ms. Tracy Goldberg, to do an introduction of the staff here at Woodland Hills Park, which includes the rec center as well as the swimming pool.
You guys are taking my speech.
Sorry.
You'll hear a few repeats. Good morning, everyone. Good morning, commissioners, rep, staff, and members of the public. I'm Tracy Goldberg, superintendent of the Valley Region. Welcome to beautiful Woodland Hills. I was going to tell you that it's a gem of CD3, but that's already been done. But it is a gem of the West Valley for recreation and parks as well. This facility has seen several iterations going all the way back to 1960 when Councilman McGee broke ground on the first new swimming pool and bathhouse to be added to the Woodland Hills Playground. In 1964, actor-comedian Buster Keaton, honorary mayor of Woodland Hills, accepted the field house on behalf of the community. A new 4,300-square-foot community building was added in 1979. The new Woodland Hills Rec Center that you see now was dedicated in 2017, as mentioned previously. The site consists of a 12,000-square-foot recreation building with a gymnasium, several multi-purpose rooms, a kitchen, outdoor meeting areas, several children's play areas, including a preschool, one that is enclosed, especially for the preschool. The complex also includes a new 6,800-square-foot pool and bathhouse, in addition to the ball diamonds and tennis courts. The complex features solar lighting and solar panels that serve as shade structures outside, free Wi-Fi, and beautiful landscaping. Program highlights, if you'll indulge me, program highlights include sports leagues and clinics in baseball, softball, volleyball, flag football, soccer, basketball, and tennis. Classes include pre-K, parent and me, art classes, cooking, ballet, piano, guitar, karate, yoga, strength and conditioning, cartooning, drums, and resume and interview workshops. Woodland Hills also conducts 4 different day camp programs when kids are out of school, with the largest main one having around 150 kids per week. So it's quite large. Their special events include holiday shows, an event called Spring Fest, and of course, Halloween festivities coming up soon. Now I'd like to introduce the dedicated staff. Hopefully they're in the back. I hope so. I'll start with Senior Recreation Director Lee Marks, and Recreation Coordinator Nico Garcia, their Recreation Supervisor Arlene Cordova, who has just joined us about a month or so ago. There she is. Hello. and their Recreation Assistants that are here today helping get everything ready for us, Christina Barbado and Gabriela Barrias, among many other Recreation Assistants and instructors. We'd also like to introduce the maintenance staff for the site. We have under the supervision of Joshua Martinez, the acting senior park maintenance supervisor. We have Renee Martinez, park maintenance supervisor, senior gardener Chase Cole, gardener caretaker Hilario Zasadi, and part-time gardener caretakers Paula Gale and Santos Madrigal. And last but not least, Ingrid Gonzalez, the aquatic facility manager too, who oversees the pool operations year round. Thank you so much and have a great meeting.
Thank you, Ms. Tracy Goldberg, Superintendent of the Valley Region. I will now provide some highlights from the department. I want to remind and encourage the public to visit laparks.org to find out about the amazing programs that we have throughout our department, as well as any special event information near you. I also wanted to make note that our official summer pool operation concluded on Labor Day, but due to funding support from some of our council offices, we are happy to announce that we are extending seven swimming pool operations through September 29th. Those seven pools are Valley Plaza, North Hollywood, Pan Pacific, Ritchie Valens, Reseda, Sylmar, and Harbor. These six pools will be open Saturdays and Sundays from 1 to 5. We also have the Hanson Dam Aquatic Center, which is also open Saturday, some Sunday from 11 to 6. In addition to that, we also have 21 year-round facilities available to the public, which includes Woodland Hills Swimming Pool. For more information, please visit laparks.org for more information on our aquatics operation, and I encourage you to beat the heat and get into the pool. A couple of general updates. The commission has received various communications from constituents, and we have assigned appropriate staff to follow up. I wanted to provide a report on the Wilmington Senior Center from our last meeting. To give you a background, the Wilmington Senior Center is currently under a month-to-month lease agreement with the Wilmington JC Foundation. We did approve a board report 24-068 back in April. That board report is currently in process and currently in the design stage now. They are already working with our roof and HVAC staff to develop a scope. The JCs are still working on that scope, and once the final plan is approved, that will then come to the board for approval so they can start the work. In addition to that, the JCs have applied and received a secondary funding for CDBG funding for another project. That was not coordinated with the department, and so now we have to go through the process of reviewing the second project. So we're working with the council office to determine the priority in which they want us to work on their projects, because we do have priorities with the council office that they request us to work on. So that's an update on the Wilmington Senior Center.
Do we have a timing, Jimmy, in terms of when the schedule?
That was listed on board report 24-068, but the completion of the project was supposed to be sometime this year, but that was delayed because we're waiting on the scope from the JCs.
Is there any way we can help to expedite that?
This project, because it's all under the purview of the JCs, they would have to develop the scope. We provided them like technical expertise, but it's under their lease agreement that they would have, because it's assigned to them.
I see. Thank you.
Next, I wanted to provide a report back on the Peck Park swimming pool. By way of background, the Peck Park swimming pool was shut down in 2016 due to a critical infrastructure failure. The main tank was no longer capable of holding water. And so the cause of this significant issue pointed to the inherent geological instability of its location. If you don't know, the pool is situated kind of on the edge of a slope that slopes to a kind of a bowl figure baseball area. And the shifting ground ultimately compromised the integrity of the pool's tank infrastructure. A ballpark estimate to replace the pool would be somewhere in the range of $40 to $60 million. And so we continue to work with the council office as well as the budget cycle to identify funding to make those more than repairs, but probably a replacement, so that we could get that pool up and running. So we're working on those. As you all know, we just went through a parks needs assessment, a part of that park needs assessment will help us identify, how to identify the best use of our resources in the neediest parts of our city. And obviously Peck Peck Pool has been on that list for a very long time because of the longevity of its closure. That concludes my updates. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jimmy. Our next order of business is general public comment.
I'm sorry. I do have one more item that does not conclude my general manager update.
You can't do a take back.
Sorry. I'm going to have to do a take back this one.
Okay, take back.
So I am going to, we have our consultant from Olin Group to give us a informational report back on our parks needs assessment.
Thanks, Jimmy. Good morning, commissioners. It's nice to see you again. And we are having a very exciting week because this week the parks needs assessment is available to the public as of Tuesday for review. And I'm really excited just to give a quick 10-minute update to you today about that. You should have a print. I'm going to follow along to try to help you know when I'm turning here. And members of the public, you should be able to see here. I do want to start with a huge thank you to everyone, those of you on the board that have helped us move this along, as well as the RAP teams, as well as the general public for all the comment that they have provided this year.
Will you introduce yourself, Jessica?
Oh, absolutely. I apologize. My name is Jessica Henson. I'm a landscape architect and planner at Olin. We've been working with the RAP team this year on the Parks Needs Assessment, and it's nice to see all of you again. I'll start with some updates, a quick, very quick run through of what you'll see in the draft. I want to report out a little bit on the budget based on some of the questions we heard last time, and then tell you where we landed on prioritization and then the next steps. On the schedule page, which looks like these four circles, we've been moving through a four-step process. We have made it to the draft, so we are on schedule. When we approved this contract last December, we said at the beginning of month 9, we wanted this to go public, and we are there and very excited. You can look on this page. There's a QR code that can take you to the website, and this is also for everyone out there. You can explore the P&A in multiple ways. You can literally download a PDF of the document fully. You can also explore the document in an interactive online PDF, or you can actually just browse the website. The same content that is in the book is in the website. That allows you to sort of link through it and also allows it to be translated into 10 different languages. And also, if you are hard of, have difficulty seeing, there is alt text available for folks. So we've really tried to make this accessible to a wide crowd. On the next few pages in this, you will see there's been a lot of engagement this year, and just thanks to Angelinos for coming along on this journey. If you count all of the digital stuff, we've really had almost 100,000 people engage in one way or another on this. We've had people take surveys, and we've done a lot of interactive fun things with youth, some tribal group listening sessions, and we've had 12 community partner organizations along the way. On this slide, you can see some of the images of things that we've done out there in the community. And on the next slide, you can see an image of what the project website looks like when you go to the webpage. I really want to give a shout out to our 12 community partner organizations that have helped along the way, and they're really helping to get the word out that the draft is available this month. Up here in the Valley, we've had groups get involved like Pacoima Beautiful. We've had groups like Nature for All, Homeless Healthcare LA, LA Compost, Heart of LA Tree People, the Bike Coalition, and this has been really a valuable partnership, and we hope that that will just continue to blossom in the years to come as RAP continues other projects. And then potentially most exciting, and for those of you here today, we are kicking off a month long of a lot of really cool stuff. So tonight at Bellevue Terrace, we're going to have tacos and a launch of this. So if you want to come on out around 6 p.m., but we also have some other events next week where you can log into webinars if you really want to like nerd out on some of the details with us. We have some equity sessions, more listening sessions, and the steering committee continues to meet. The next section here of the slides in front of you are a quick walkthrough, and I'm not going to spend too much time on this because I realize you have a whole meeting in front, but to say that there are five sections of the needs assessment: the context, rec and parks today, community needs, guidelines, and implementation. And you can check through all of those and spend some quality time with this document.
And then there also are some shortcuts. So if you really just want to check out a specific park, you can do that. And that's especially important to a lot of our community members that use a specific park or two. The next few pages here go through each of those sections. So the context section talks about other planning efforts at the city, county, state, federal level. We have a section here on engagement, so you can see what has been done. And we did publish in there not only the survey results, but some crosstabs. I think last time this group had asked how the crosstabs broke down. The next section, which is about our system today, talks through the history and then where that lands us today, some of the budget information, as we all are familiar, which has been lagging. And then the section on community needs is where we really get into the heart of what we've been hearing from residents this year. So we do benchmarking against other cities, as well as looking at sites, all of our sites across the city, at different sort of scales to understand those community needs. And then it's also broken down by region if you really want to compare different areas of the city. I will say the needs are varied, as you all know, across the city. Then we land at the site prioritization. This is a really intended to be a very helpful tool for the RAP staff and for you all to see where the issues that the community has been raising this year are most critical. So when funding decisions come up, that can help guide those decisions. The section four, which is called guidelines, this is a section that we added after a lot of comments in the late spring and the summer from the community, but also folks like yourselves. And this is really not just like, okay, so we have these priorities. What are the things that we want to prioritize there? And that includes information on things like acquisition, vision planning, design, construction, operation, and evaluation. So there's a slide here with six circles with those pieces of information. There's also information here on the level of service, how we stack up to our peers in terms of the availability of services. And then the last section, very importantly, is implementation. This is where we get into the cost estimates and potential funding strategies that the team has been working on. This also includes decision-making tools for the RAP team. So sometimes it's not always clear how to prioritize something. So there's some flowcharts in the vision, in the assessment that helped to describe how to go through that process. The other section that I wanted to give a brief update today is on the budget data. This comes out of some of the questions that we discussed last time. We know the budget has been struggling over past years. We've been in this five-step process, which you can see on this slide, to go through those budget gaps and understand them, as well as identify what the costs of things are. On this slide, you can see some of the things that we've been looking at. So we've been looking at deferred maintenance, needs for new facilities. We've been looking at potentially acquisition of parkland. And we've been looking at how this relates to the operating costs, which is very important. While we have heard requests for new parks and new facilities this year, we've also heard requests for just better operations and maintenance dollars. In the P&A, things are divided into different categories: minor refresh, major refresh, and new build. Some of these things just need repair. We have, you'll see in a second, about $2.6 billion now of deferred maintenance, up from about $2 billion 7 years ago. We've looked at each of these capital investments relative to park facilities, architecture, infrastructure, and new park facilities, and we've done a comprehensive estimate of those costs. To my knowledge, this is the first time this has been done like holistically all at once, where we've even looked at like, do electrical or water systems need to be upgraded at certain facilities? We also looked at staffing needs. On this page, you can see a couple of different ways of looking at that. We've looked at what we're staffing prior. We've looked at our peers. Our peers have about twice as many staff per acre as RAP. And we've also looked at what those level of service goals in. So the big takeaway, which I'll just jump to, is that if you took everything together, there's about over the next 25 years a projected $15 billion worth of work to do. And we more or less need about twice as much money in the annual budget as we have. I'm sure I'm not surprising anyone here today. You know that. How does that break down? Let's start with the $15 billion. The $15 billion breaks down in two ways. One is $2.6 billion of deferred maintenance. Like I said, the longer some of that gets put off, the more expensive it becomes. A facility that was eligible to be repaired 8 years ago now has to be just totally rebuilt. We also looked at all the level of service things, all the things we've heard from people about new parks, new acres, new baseball diamonds. That all adds up to about $12 billion over the next 25 years. These numbers are in 2025 dollars. Obviously, the longer we wait to do things, the more expensive things get. I do want to just reassure the public that there is money in the system that we wield. So part of the assessment is to understand how to prioritize that. And so figuring out how to steward the money we have well now and continue to do what the board does already, but then also looking for those additional funding sources. The next slide talks about the operating costs. We don't want to leave this out because this is something that not all funding measures in the past have helped us with. We need about twice as much. The general fund reimbursement that we do today, we expect that's only going to get higher. We've done some projections around that, as well as staffing and expenses, and would like to work toward almost doubling where we are today. We are working on strategies for funding, so HRNA on the team has been putting together a series of different options, and this is something that the steering committee is thinking very hard about, and they're meeting again in a couple of weeks. And then the last section I'm going to just mention today is prioritization updates. You may remember we've been in this three-step process, looks like this, of reviewing all of the sites that we have, plus sites we might have in the future, going through a prioritization of them, and then identifying tools for them. At prior meetings, you saw a version of this that looked like this. We've taken that out to the community. We've gotten feedback. We heard from a lot of people how different elements like shade, for example, actually affects multiple categories here. So we have done a revision of that in the final P&A, which you can check out later. But looking at how the community really responded to us in terms of weighting some of these elements, as well as help from yourselves and the steering committee. That has led us to a composite of the city. For those of you that study our city a lot, some of this won't be surprising to you. The darker colors are where we see more of those needs at parks. And of course, issues like climate, issues like equity, issues like past investment really play a role in that. You can also, in the P&A, browse those different priorities around the city individually in this slide. Or there are different charts that break that down. I won't go into detail now, but I'm sure everybody can't wait to get back home and check out all of the park priorities around the city. And you can see those on the slide here. And then lastly, just next steps. Certainly hope people will come out to some of the meetings tonight and Saturday. We have tacos tonight, breakfast burritos on Saturday, prizes. You can win like a t-shirt or a water bottle, as well as you can learn about the P&A. And we're also coming up on equity sessions, some of our tribal briefings, and all of this information for anybody out there. There are prints of this available if you want to head out with one today. We hope you will check out some of the upcoming engagement pop-up events, or if nothing else, check out the website. We will be putting recordings of the webinar meetings online. So if you can't come out in person, we hope you'll check those out. Thank you all so much for the time.
Thank you for so much for the work and for the presentation. I had just a quick question or maybe a request. It's really helpful to see, the $15 billion and the staff cost operation. And I'm noting the funding strategies recommendation and some areas of suggestion of where funding would come from. Is there an anticipation of being able to put a dollar amount to that prospective funding as well?
Yes, I think it's a great question. This is actually one of our things we want to work on with the steering committee in a couple of weeks, is like how much realistically could society afford, say, in a charter revision or say in a bond measure. So like Prop K was $750 million over 30 years, sunsetting next year. That was 1996 dollars. What could something like that look like? While RAP itself will not lead the funding measure, there are parks advocates that are currently thinking toward some of those elements as well, and they're on the steering committee, which is great.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, because I think Prop 4, Prop O, Measure W, those are...
Yeah.
state and federal?
And county for Measure W is $285 million annually. And so what percentage of that that the city taps into, and then what subset is for parks? Absolutely putting some ranges on there as part of this.
And then I would encourage to look at perhaps through the Parks Foundation, philanthropic support, particularly as it relates to the new MOU with LAUSD that was passed last week with the community school parks,
yeah,
and the opportunity to bring in, you know, philanthropic dollars to help advance at least the deferred maintenance and some shading and things of that nature that are, I think, proposed or hopeful for the community school parks sites.
That's a great point. And I should have mentioned, we did have a great meeting on Thursday with funders and foundations, and there's a lot of enthusiasm for this document because it helps them quickly narrow in, like you said.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions?
Okay, well,
Matthew Rudnick, executive officer. I just did want to thank Olin and their team. Jessica's representing a really robust team that we've brought on, and they've been working around the clock for the better part of 8 months. I also just want to thank our team that's been focusing a significant amount of effort on what is in front of you. I mean, this is, I encourage the board and the commission to just take a look at as much of the document as possible. It's a very robust, perhaps the most comprehensive look at our park system in recent decades. And it really does set a good framework, but this is the time to make suggestions and comments on it. It's a 45-day window that started this Tuesday for the public and for Rec and Park staff. So we are attempting to really provide as much feedback now to work and inform the final version. I just want to lift up Daryl Ford, Megan Luera, and Jeremy Silva for all their work on it as well. Again, this is a heavy lift on top of our day-to-day work. So I want to just thank all the work that's gone into this, and there's a lot more ahead. So really appreciate also Commissioner Lloyd's particular support for the effort and on the planning committee as well. So thank you so much.
And I just want to add, yes, you know, call to action for the public and everyone here to engage in the draft plan and see what we get right, what we get wrong, where we need to go stronger. As noted, we will dive a little bit deeper into the funding piece. I do want to say, I know there is an interest from organizations and leaders outside of RAP to look at outside funding measures, that's a bond or something. I think, and I want to say on record here, this is something that should be led by RAP and not by outside entity. And so something that I'd like to discuss further with the commission and the leadership here.
Finally, I wanted to say again, thank you to Jessica, the Olin team, all the RAP staff. And again, I wanted to make sure that we elevate the critical request to the listening public and staff to really chime in at this point for the 45-day review on the draft PNA. I mean, ultimately, this PNA is going to guide how we prioritize our investments and resources for the next 25 years. So this is truly a generational project for the department. So thank you for all your efforts. And finally, because I had a take back, so I'm going to make this count.
That was a good take back, though. So
yes, it is. So I was just told that today is the official founding date of the city of Los Angeles, September 4th, 1781. So happy 244th birthday to Los Angeles. And that concludes my report. Thank you so much.
Hey, shout out to the Los Pobladores. You done?
Yes, thank okay. you.
All right. Before we, general public comment, Takesha, can you call the, can you conduct general public comment, please?
Will do, Madam President. I will call the first three constituents to come up to the podium to make a public comment. You will be granted a maximum of 2 minutes. And if you have further comments, you may send them to our RAP inbox at rap.commissioners@lacity.org. And I'm going to bring up the first three. Jim Plum, T. Higgins, and Cherry Kavanaugh.
All
Jeannie Plum, I distributed amongst you the 3 pages of photographs that will illustrate my issue here today. It's not about Stony Point or the pony rides. These are 3 blocks of horse trails that have been maintained by the city of Los Angeles since they were built in the 70s, because at that time, no homeowners associations were assigned to that maintenance. In the last several weeks, Rec and Parks crews have been out because the trails are overwhelmed with city pine needles and dead things from the trees. And you can see the sandbags that were put there to prevent erosion, which were spread on the trail. As you recall, in the 80s, Councilman Burnson moved the horse license fee from Animal Reg to Rec and Parks to maintain our horse trails. The last 2 weeks, the crew has arrived. They've used a grader to push all of the debris onto the sides of the horse trail and the sandbags into the horse trails. And then they used leaf blowers to blow all the needles either back onto the horse trails or out into the cities in the curve. When you go through the pictures, you'll see that it's not only unsafe for the horseback riders, but the pedestrians who use our trails for jogging, which is allowed. Nothing with wheels, but joggers and their dogs on leash are allowed. I'm here to plead with the commission because I have asked the supervisor of that department in our area in Chatsworth, and my calls are not responded to. Please bring your staff back. Ask the general manager to have these people properly clear the debris, pick it up, and remove it. Don't spread it all over the streets and our horse trails. These 3 blocks of horse trails on Canoga Avenue, Chatsworth Street, and Rinaldi are the most heavily used in the city because they're surrounded by the last of our horse keeping property and our public and private bridle trails. It's a simple.
Thank you for your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Greetings. T. Hagens, Los Angeles Equine Advisory Committee, Vice President, Council District 4. Horseback riding in the park is a soul restorative activity that helps people embody themselves more authentically and also serves as a diversion from despair and harm. So I want to thank you all, RAP staff and commissioners, for preserving and protecting that experience in the park. But I want to send a special shout out to CD4, Stephanie Smith, the superintendent of Griffith Park, the maintenance team, Jorge, Juan, Gabriella, for your constant stewardship of the equestrian suite of services in Griffith Park. You are immensely appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, good morning. My name is Sherry Kavanaugh. I'm here representing Wind River Dressage that's located at the Los Angeles Equestrian Center. Both the trainer and the clients asked me to share with you their concerns about the current management. In particular, their billing and invoicing system that they use, and also their lack of communication with the trainers and boarders on their policies and procedures. So another group of members from the Los Angeles Equestrian Center are here today, and they'll brief you on that, but I'm asking you to at least make an effort to address those concerns. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to bring up the next 3 constituents. You have to wait till I call your name, Jordan. No, sorry. I'm going to bring up the next 3, Sabrina Silver, Cameron Flanagan, and now Jerry Calderon.
Hello, board and RAP execs. I also want to thank you guys for your commitment and stewardship for equestrian issues and services in the city of LA. It really is, as T said, soul serving. It's really, it can save a life being involved with horses. I am a member of the LA EAC, but today I'm speaking as an individual who boards horse her horse at LAEC. I have three questions. The status of the board report 24278, there was you guys wanted a to be delivered by March 6th, a business plan. And I don't know whether that ever happened and whether it's public and we can see it. Also, the status of oversight of the other contractual obligations on board report 22-114 and the accountability and how that's enforced. And lastly, number three, has there been a needs assessment done of LAEC with prioritization? How are those priorities determined and by whom, and who is accountable for that? It is a truly a gem of the city, the Los Angeles Equestrian Center. And, you know, there's been a lot of changes since 2020 and since 2024, but there's a far way to go still in order to get it to the place where it really needs to be to reflect the gem that it is. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your time.
Morning, commissioners. General Manager Jimmy Kim has an email about some follow-on conversations regarding Riverside Bridge Home Shelter. As you know, the situation there, multiple issues over the past year and prior. The community is holding firm in asking for a special hearing about the Riverside Bridge Home. We heard from CD4 Deputy Siggins that about the ambassador program. There is no exterior security outside the shelter. The ambassador program is not designed for that, and Circle Team is very rarely on premises for that purpose. The residents, any new operator of the shelter also needs to have strict adherence to rules for the people who are inside the shelter when they're operating on parkland. Currently, Loss has been on property, and they do not have any authorization that I know of. So there's a liability here for Rec and Parks as well as General Services Department. What we know is that 28 residents of the 300 in the shelter have graduated in the 5 years it has been operating. That's a 14% success rate. It's very low. Mrs. Rahman should be here to answer any questions related to the low success rate. I'm asking for you to please have her come to the special hearing regarding the Riverside Bridge Home Shelter. And that since the new operator Weingart will be there in October 1, they need to have a lease with Rec and Parks so that Rec and Parks actually gets paid. Because this is going on and on and on after the 3-year promise. And we in the community would like more safety outside the shelter. And a lot of that has to do with the behavior of the residents inside the shelter for the greater community. So that's what I'm asking for, is a special hearing. If you could agendize that where all parties can come to the table and talk about this and, you know, see.
Thank you for your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Morning, commissioners. My name is Jerry Calderon, and I am here on behalf of the Tatavium Land Conservancy. The Land Conservancy is a 501c3 nonprofit founded by the Fernandinho, Tatavium Band, and Mission Indians, the tribe of Northern Los Angeles County. Our mission is to restore the tribe's traditional homelands across the Antelope, Santa Clarita, San Fernando, and Simi Valleys. We are here today to respectfully request that the commission direct its staff on how to move forward with the process for the Conservancy's interpretive signage project. A primary component of the Land Conservancy's work focuses on uplifting tribal visibility and advancing opportunities for public education. In 2021, and in tandem with the Upper Alley River and Tributary Plan, the Conservancy was awarded funding from the Santa Monica Mountains Conservancy to develop an interpretive signage series authored by the tribe. The project has two phases. For phase one, the Land Conservancy spearheaded community engagement, during which tribal citizens commented on existing signage, as well as shared stories and historical points they wanted the public to know, as well as provided input on potential locations for installation. The results were clear. tribal citizens did not feel that the existing signage adequately represented them, citing their use of past tense language and depicting them in defeated silhouettes. The tribe is resilient, colorful, and empowering. It is essential that public education signs reflect this. During phase two, the Conservancy developed signs for four highly visible parklands, including Bram Park, Handsome Dam, and Lake Balboa. While early discussions with Alirap's partnerships team was encouraging, and despite our responsiveness to every identified concern, such as developing a signage maintenance plan and securing support from the City and County Native American Indian Commission, our project has stalled without clarity on the next steps. TLC strongly values the Commission's leadership and seeks your guidance on how we can address the gap and fulfill Ali's commitment to tribal representation. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to bring up the last constituent for the general public comment, Kathy Schreiner.
Good morning. I'm Kathy Schreiner. I'm president of the Van Nuys Neighborhood Council, but I'm speaking here as an individual, and I have to once again express park envy at this just wonderful park that is available here. I had made a comment, public comment, on June 9th at a special RAP commission meeting about proposed mix of trees to be planted in mitigation of removal of 16 trees to accommodate a new building at the Hollywood Recreation Center, of 21 new trees to be planted on site, only 29% were native, and 47 additional trees we planted in Griffith Park, only 19% were native. I followed this up with a June 25th email to the RAP commissioners of the listing of the native trees. I said in my comment, I wanted to advocate for Recon Parks to place a greater emphasis on planting California native trees, especially when non-native trees are removed and there's an opportunity to plant California native trees, and the special opportunity here when planting in Griffith Park, so not as restricted with regard to the size of the tree. President Simrell asked for a report back on whether tree replacement for the project followed the policy approved by the board. On August 7th, Jimmy Kim reported that the tree species selection to mitigate tree removal is in line with recently approved RAP forestry manual. But then he proceeded to say that exclusively planting native trees can sometimes be limiting and even harmful. I was listening on Zoom and I was really surprised. And they went on to talk about the need for a diverse mix of trees, and that the park, you know, native trees will play a key role, but they have to be complemented by other well-suited species. So I did not ask for exclusively planting native trees, and I want to be very clear what I wanted to say. I'm advocating that the department and the commission plant more native trees, especially when there are opportunities to plant new trees. Page 5 of the LA Biodiversity Guidelines advocate for a diverse planting palette and recommends for best results aim for no less than 70% locally native species in landscaping design. So I'm asking you to take this under advisement and to really think about the opportunity. Recon Parks is one of the major tree planters in the whole city of LA. So you really have a great opportunity, and I hope you'll
thank you for your time. Thank you. No further requests for general public comments, Sarah.
Thank you. Before we consider board reports, we will now hear from members of the public who wish to make public comment on specific board report items.
Madam President, we only have one person, so I'll bring them up. Judith Baca.
Hello.
Good morning, Commissioners.
Good to see you.
I'm here to, I'm Artistic Director of the Social and Public Art Resource Center, which is a nonprofit organization that has been engaged with the Tahunga Wash for 50 years. And in that process, we have painted a half a mile long mural, a narrative story that is a completion of the story of American history. We have just completed a bridge, in May, that spans from one side of the river to the other, bringing three schools a capacity to get on the buses and to view the whole half a mile of the mural. We call it the Interpretive Green Bridge. It's a beautiful bridge that is both an educational tool in the sense that one part of it, the rails on the bridge, tell people about what was in the river before it was turned to concrete, both in the animal life and in the marine life. The bridge is up, it's lit, and it is now open to the public. We're asking today on item 25156 that you approve and accept the bridge. This is an effort that has been going on for since 2017. Actually, we've spent over $7 million that we have raised for this production through the nonprofit from both government and private foundations. And we have produced this amazing connection between the interpretive stations, the bridge, and the capacity for people to see the work. So you'll be, it'll be coming before you. We urge your acceptance of the bridge so that it can be into the purview and control of the Rec and Parks Department, because the nonprofit is completed its funding and its work on this. As I said,
thank you for your time. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Madam President, there are no further requests for board report public comment.
Thank you, Takesha. Do we have any neighborhood council comments before we take the board report items?
We have not received any such requests, Madam President.
Okay, hearing none. And with the consideration of my commissioners, I'd like to take the following board reports on consent. 25151, 152, 153, 154, 157, and 158. Do I have a motion to take these items on consent?
Motion.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Takesha, I have a motion and a second to take those board reports on consent. Can you call for the vote, please?
Yes, Madam President. We have a motion and a second to take the following board reports on consent. 25-151, 25-152, 25-153, 25-154, 25-157, and 25-158. Commissioner Lloyd, how do you vote?
Aye.
Vice President Sanchez, how do you vote?
Aye.
Commissioner Tran, how do you vote?
Aye.
Commissioner Bain, how do you vote?
Aye.
President Simrell, how do you vote?
Aye.
And the motion carries.
Thank you. Then we'll hear item 155.
Good morning, commissioners.
Good morning.
My name is Jeremy Silva. I'm a city planning associate in the planning, maintenance, and construction branch of recreation and parks. Today, I'm presenting board report 25-155. So the project presented to you today is vesting tentative tract map VTT 84832CC, which staff recommends the in-lieu fee payment to the city as an appropriate mitigation measure pursuant to LAMC section 12.33. This project is located at 10,000 and 10,022 West Santa Monica Boulevard and 201 East Moreno Drive in the West Los Angeles community of the city. So VTT 84832, also known as the Landmark Los Angeles, proposes to permit a 283-unit apartment to condominium conversion for an existing 39-story residential building. The building permit for the existing apartment, attachment 5 to the report for the project, was issued on July 24, 2014, and C of O was issued on June 30, 2017. According to California Government Code Section 66477D, the Quimby Act does not apply to commercial or industrial subdivisions or to condominium projects or stock cooperatives that consist of the subdivision of airspace in an existing apartment building that is more than 5 years old when no new dwelling units are added. As previously stated, the C of O for the 283 apartment units was issued on June 30th, 2017, and no new units are proposed to be constructed as part of this tract map application. Therefore, the project is exempt from the Quimby fee for the apartment to condominium unit conversion. RAP staff recommends that the appropriate mitigation measure and condition language for this proposed project is the payment of in-lieu fee. At the time the condition is ready to be cleared by the developer, RAP will issue an invoice of $0.00, assuming the map is not modified in the interim. Excuse me. This concludes my report. Thank you.
So I was just curious as to, the report was helpful, thank you, but I was curious as to, the C of O was issued in 2017.
Right.
So why are we just now hearing this item?
Because they're filing a tract map for the condo conversion.
So it's the apartments to condos that require a look, but there is no based on. Okay, that's helpful. Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank
you. Next item is 156.
Good morning, Commissioners. Brian Miller, Planning Maintenance and Construction Branch. Report number 25156 recommends the partial acceptance of the Los Angeles Green Bridge project and approval of the allocation of $132,000 in Quimby funds to procure and plant replacement trees at the project site in order for the project to be in conformance with RAP tree replacement standards. In 2007, the city entered into a 20-year sublicense agreement with the Social and Public Art Resource Center, or SPARC, for the replacement of the bridge located within Tahunga Greenbelt Park, along with the construction of several interpretive stations. In December 2023, the board approved a revision to the project scope that included the removal and replacement of three trees, which were obstructing the placement of the crane that delivered the completed bridge over the wash. In April 2025, SPARC sent a letter to RAP advising RAP that SPARC had reached substantial completion of the work on the bridge component of the project and had received the certificate of occupancy for the bridge from the Department of Building and Safety. In that letter, SPARC requested that the city accept the bridge as soon as possible, as SPARC, quote, can no longer encumber the costs of maintenance and operation of a pedestrian bridge, which greatly exceeded our budgeted costs. A final walkthrough of the site was conducted by RAP staff in May 2025 to inspect the portion of the project that had been completed by SPARC. Following the walkthrough, SPARC was provided with a punch list of items that needed to be addressed before RAP staff could recommend the acceptance of the portion of the project that had been completed. At this time, the majority of the identified punch list items have been addressed by SPARC and or RAP staff. RAP staff has inspected the improvements and determined that the completed elements of the project can now be accepted. Upon submitting all permits, drawings, operation and maintenance manuals, warranties, guarantees, and final as-built plans for the portion of the project that has been completed, RAP will furnish SPARC with a letter of partial acceptance. As previously mentioned, in 2023, the board approved a revised project scope, which included the removal and replacement of three trees. SPARC completed the removal of the three trees, but subsequently claimed that it is unable to provide the 19 trees the RAP board required as mitigation, as it no longer has the resources or ability to complete that element of the project. In order for the project to be in conformance with RAP tree replacement standards, it will be necessary for RAP staff to procure and plant the replacement trees in conformance with the previously approved planting plan. Upon approval of this report, $132,000 in Quimby fees will be transferred and allocated to the project in order to procure and plant the aforementioned trees. This concludes my report. Thank you.
Thank you. Helpful question. You're requesting for us to approve partial acceptance.
That's correct.
So when do we get final acceptance? What's that process?
I'm going to hand it over to Daryl Ford, who would like to respond to your questions.
Good morning. Sorry, commissioners. Daryl Ford, Planning Maintenance Construction Branch, Superintendent Planning. Just, real quickly, the commissioner, your question about the final acceptance for the project. So as the board report details, the outstanding element when the project was originally approved in 2007, essentially are the interpretive stations. So pursuant to the first agreement that was done, it was the bridge, the lighting, and the interpretive stations. So the interpretive stations, as noted, still have yet to be approved. That's essentially the final part of the project that SPARC originally agreed with the city to do. So the other part, which technically is also still outstanding, but the board report, if approved, would take care of, are the trees for the mitigation. But just to answer directly, it would be the interpretive signs. So when that would be done is essentially the ball is with SPARC. As the board may recall, we adopted a new policy as it pertains to artwork. So these interpretive signs, not to dive too far into it, they either need to be permanent interpretive signs, which permanent art is under the control of DCA, or temporary signs pursuant to our policy that can only be there for 5 years. So Spark is engaged with DCA. I understand that DCA has said these are not to be permanent signs, so they have to be processed as temporary signs, which we advise Spark of, which is the process to do so, and we're still waiting for them to apply. So when they do that, we'll move through the art process for a temporary sign installation. Ultimately, that would come back to the board for your approval, so those could be installed, and that would essentially complete what Spark originally agreed to do in 2007. I hope that condenses down. I left out a lot of details, but yeah, I can certainly answer it if you haven't.
No, it does. Thank you. That's very helpful. Tafari.
Hey, Daryl.
Good to see you again.
You too.
Very good to see you again.
Thanks. Good to see you too. Thank you for that. I actually did have some questions about the signage process. In terms of this, so I hear you saying that these signs are, if there are signs from Rec and Parks, they only could be there for 5 years?
Yes. So under the policy that the board recently adopted, essentially we clarified that temporary artwork would be taken for this board, but would be temporary in nature, so up to 5 years, with the idea that artwork can be changed out so that new artwork has an opportunity to be there. Permanent artwork in our city is under the jurisdiction of DCA. So again, so we've really clarified those jurisdictional lines and said it's permanent. It goes in the city's art collection. DCA will be the lead and take care of it. And also that means DCA is responsible. It's not permanent, then it goes through the RAP process and it's essentially temporary.
The art piece itself that the signs are attached to, is that a permanent art piece?
So the signs themselves are art. They're interpreting the wall, and I'm sure that Spark.
Right. They're part of the wall.
Right.
They're part
right. of it. So they're interpreting the wall, but the interpretive panels themselves speak essentially. So in that context, their artwork in and of themselves, they're interpreting another piece of artwork. I hope that doesn't sound too weird, but the panels in there are artwork. So we have to look at them. Look at it in the context of what they say and what even the interpretive panels look like, and then consider that as their own pieces of artwork that would come to the board separate.
Right. I guess my confusion is that if the art that we're putting up, the wall itself, is going to be a permanent installation, are we looking at having to replace the signs every 5 years?
So the art that's in the channel is not our art. The art that the actual Great Wall that the Spark did is in the channel. So that's not RAP's property, not the city's property. The signs that would be put up are interpreting those so that viewers are walking by and understand what they're looking at on the wall. That is quote unquote our art. That's our art interpreting the other art on the channel wall.
So I'm clear, like you'll have to replace those signs every 5 years, even though the piece that they're interpreting is going to be there for.
You're absolutely correct. If those pieces are not considered to be permanent, given that they're trying to interpret something else that's essentially permanent, then we have to look at them as temporary. I can't speak for DCA and why they made the decision that they made. We can only move forward with, we don't do permanent art, we do temporary art. So you're absolutely correct that now we have a situation where we would have to essentially ask Spark or whoever applies for that art to come back and remove it after 5 years. And then we'll have a situation where we have displays with nothing on them. But that's the outgrowth of sort of either permanent or temporary. And that's the challenge that now our department would be in the middle of.
Can we have a process in which if in 5 years from now, we feel that the signage is still appropriate, we just approve what already exists?
So Commissioner, we certainly could have a process. And I think that's something to discuss as a part of the art policy. The conversation we had on the art policy was the purpose of the short term was both also so that we're not stepping authority-wise under the department's authority the council has given them, but also that art is supposed to have the opportunity for others to produce art there. Now, this is a very unique situation where the art is trying to interpret something that's essentially permanent. Again, I can't speak to the other departments and I won't do that, but you're absolutely correct. There may be a need to think about these sorts of situations, but I would say at the staff level is to keep in mind the context of those rules that also apply to other pieces of artwork. And one thing that we are constantly trying to talk to applicants about is not sort of trying to daisy chain a temporary installation and make it permanent by just continuing it. But you're correct that it's a...
Yeah, I guess my question is, if in 5 years from now, Spark would come back to us and say, we have no changes, we would approve no changes, or would Spark have to do something? Would they have to make a change in 5 years in order to...
Commissioner, I think it's an issue of maintenance. So who is going to maintain what looks to be seating and signage to me? So I was curious in terms of whether or not that's Rec and Parks, whether or not that's Spark, or whether or not that's the DCA. is the issue, because we've had challenges in the past where we haven't maintained that piece of art. And artists, remember, we took that vote last meeting. So that, I think, is at the crux of the issue. But my question is, and I didn't pull the updated art policy that we passed a few months ago, maybe a year ago now, but what do you have the reference to the language in terms of why we're seeing this as interpretive art as opposed to signage?
Well, I can go to it very briefly. Mm-hmm. So it's maybe an easy way of putting it is signage just speaks as to what you're seeing. I maybe a simplistic way of this is
bathroom.
This is a tree. This is a that, right? Not to speak too far, but these panels tell a story. They have artwork on them, but they tell a story about the story on the wall. So in the context of looking at these panels, if they just existed by themselves, they are art. They're not only just interpreting what's on the wall, they're speaking. They're signs. So these are, in the classic sense, if the wall didn't exist and somebody had just proposed the panel, we would look at them straight as art. So a lot of it comes from the context. If it was simply you're at Tahunga Wash, there's a wall across from you, that is just a sign. I am here, I am there, I'm doing something, it's descriptive. These panels are interpretive and they're speaking. So we looked at it, we had some conversations internally. We all clearly think this falls within art. It would be if it was outside of this context. So that's how we're considering it.
How is this different from the bridge that has corrugated panels that it's art and telling a story?
Sorry, the bridge?
How is this different from the bridge?
The bridge was already approved by the board. So this is the difference of where we're at now is the art panels were not given to the board in 2007 or 2011 when the board approved it.
Previous board.
The board has been around forever and will be forever. Right. So I'm just sorry with the board.
So I'm just curious I see the point and we only have that to approve today, but if this was part of approval of the previous, it's almost like we're bifurcating it based on a new policy as opposed to making an exception and making this retroactive to be really clear and transparent. Because as I look at the signs, I'm assuming, you know, the wall panel on either side, the boulder sort of rock, it doesn't look like that's a heavy maintenance issue.
Yeah. So just to go to it. So again, the clearest context is the bridge itself was already approved by the board. So the panels and their artistic nature, that sort of has moved on. We, the city, aren't bifurcating it. The project was a whole project, but when it was approved by the board, certain elements were not brought to the board. So staff just pointed out that the board never had an opportunity to weigh in on those elements. So we'll weigh in on them later. That's what the series of reports keeps repeating that, hey, we've never actually approved these must come back. Three times, essentially, we had repeated that. So we, the city did not bifurcate it. We approved what was given to us to approve or requested the board to consider and approve that. So the perfect, and I apologize. It's like a good example is here, Woodland Hills Recreation Center, not to go too far. The artwork that DCA did as a part of the percent for art, it was approved as part of the project. We have the artwork that's here. That's the process that most things follow. In this case, the art wasn't before the board for consideration, so it had to come separately.
Let me ask a question. On the interpretive signage, would we have requested something different had we gone through the process? We as a staff, because you would make a recommendation to us based on your approval. It seems as if the interpretive signage is getting is bifurcated in terms of our policy and in terms of process. And so I'm just asking the question is, had we looked at this as one project, would our evaluation of the interpretive signs led to a different design?
I think there would have been a really robust conversation about the signage back in 2011 when it was approved. Yes.
Robust in what way?
And that there would have been a little more back and forth about what was on it and what it was interpreting. That's okay. My personal take on after seeing it.
Okay. So would you not accept, so is the issue that we don't want to accept what's on the signs?
No, the staff doesn't have an issue. It's obviously a board decision. All we're trying to do is make sure it gets to the board.
Well, I guess because it's a maintenance issue. Mm-hmm. And as I'm looking at these, at the interpretive signs, as we're looking at them, it doesn't seem to be that we're getting stuck in a procedural issue because it doesn't look like a large maintenance issue and that it goes along with the wall. So we could as a board, you could as a staff recommend that given the process of how these projects came, the wall first, the bridge, and then the interpretive sign, that we make a recommendation to approve it all at the same time, because if we're maintaining the bridge, it's just mind-boggling to me that we wouldn't maintain the signs that go along with the wall and the bridge.
Commissioner, I would just say I agree with you. Just to be very direct, I agree with you that what we should bring to you is the totality of the project. I'll also just make clear that we brought this project to you because we were requested to by Spark, who said that they no longer could maintain the bridge while we're at the bifurcated portion. Staff has tried very hard to get the whole project to you. We're not in control of that, but we have wanted to bring the entirety of the project completed to you, the board, for approval. But we are
in control, because you could say as staff a recommendation to the commission that we approve the bridge and the sign. It seems to be it's DCA, no, it's Rec and Parks, it's DCA, it's Rec and Parks. And so, you know, I'm just trying to think as we're making this next, and I understand the urgency in terms of Spark not being able to maintain the bridge, and we want to make sure that it's maintained. But I'm still not understanding how we're going to reconcile whose responsibility it is.
Commissioner, if I could just chime in and provide some context. Kathy Santo-Domingo, Planning, Maintenance, and Construction. The idea of a partial acceptance actually came from me. I know that our department was receiving quite a few phone calls from the community because the site was not maintained. So we have sent on occasion, you know, over a span of several weeks, our maintenance staff do some level of land maintenance for the site. So technically, if the project is not accepted, our staff should not be there. We don't have control of that site. So that's the nexus for a partial acceptance. With regards to these panels, if they were flat out straight signage and for some reason they're vandalized, you know, a replacement of that from a maintenance standpoint, you're absolutely correct. You know, our team would basically call our sign shop to refabricate, reproduce that sign and slap it on and replace it. But because the content of these panels is not our typical informational signage, it's not something that our science shop would just easily fabricate. It is, in essence, a content that's controlled by the artist and their information. So the simple maintenance of it isn't as simple. From our standpoint, we wouldn't be able to really touch it or alter it to that degree. All that we would be able to do is basically reach out to the creators of this particular piece. So in not accepting that, we need some clarity of content of the sign and you know, all of the agreements that relate to that. And that's why we're bifurcating it. What we're looking to do at this point is to just be able to be on site, be able to have maintenance presence so that the park is safe and that it is groomed and clean. The art component of it, it didn't all come to us in one piece. I know Daryl referred to 2007. This is actually a project that I had in my old life at Bureau of Engineering. It wasn't originally a Rec and Parks project. It wasn't originally at this particular park. So it's had several iterations. I'm glad it's finally, at a site and it can finally be viewed. It is piecemeal, and from we're equally frustrated that it's piecemeal, but it's just the way it came to staff. And we're continuing to work with them to get the full pieces so that we can bring it back with its final acceptance and fully baked. It's just not the way it came to us.
Commissioner Sanchez, you had a comment?
Well, the only question I had is if we are in charge of the maintenance for 5 years, though. Right, that's correct. It's temporary, but we will be in charge of the maintenance for the signage for 5 years?
No, in our new policy, artists are responsible for the maintenance of their art as well as...
We just have to just maintain around the sign.
Yes, we would be responsible for this.
So that feels like the slight red flag to me, right? Like, we're talking about a nonprofit organization who may move on and work and stuff. So we're saying like we're expecting them to, in 5 years, come back and put money into replacing these signs. Like, I mean, that just feels like a big ask.
Right, and maybe just for context for that's why the idea of the temporary policy is not that it keeps going beyond that. It's that an organization, whoever it may be, a community member wants to do a mural or anything else, has the capacity to make sure that it survives for the time that it's there, but only temporarily, because it recognizes the reality is that most things won't survive much longer than that. But that, Commissioner, just to say it that way, the intent wasn't to add a lot of burden. That's why we also made it shorter.
Right.
So if it's permanent, the city takes care of it, which is the DCA, which is the way that art that's supposed to be permanent, our city has decided to take care of.
So should we be appealing DCA's decision? Because I feel like there's a problem here.
Commissioners, Jimmy Kim, General Manager. Again, to Kathy's point, we wanted to accept the project partially so we could take responsibility of the project.
Which I appreciate.
I will be working with DCA to figure out a path forward. So, I didn't want to, prolong the conversation, but that's what I'll be working on to get it to completion.
I appreciate that. I just want to make sure we all understand the issue.
And
I mean, because this actually came to our task force to create clarity, not to create the process where DCA will keep putting stuff back to us and we have to create temporary solutions. So I'm just worried that we created more of a problem than a solution. So
and I'll just give one signing apologies for a little bit of context too, and I just want to make sure it's said. Certainly since 2007 and 8, our understanding of sign guidance and policy and things around it have advanced. So I would also say, Commissioner, that we are much more honed in now at staring at anything that's speaking and making sure that it follows a little bit more. So I just want to give some context to my earlier comment of, I think we would have talked about it more. It's just, we've learned a lot more about signs and government speech in the past few years and what they can and cannot say. And I just think that our current guidance would have led us in a different direction. That's really all I meant by that. So I just want to make sure to clarify.
No, I understand. I appreciate that. So what we have before us now is an urgency, so to speak, of approving the bridge so that we are able to access and maintain it. And that I'm hearing General Manager Jimmy Kim is committed to working through the issue with DCA so that we can have clarity on the full nature of the project. Is that correct? And we get trees. Was that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Any other comments or questions? Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay. With that, that was our last board report. And with the consent of my commissioners, I'd like to have a motion to approve item 155 and 156. Do I have a motion?
Commissioner Bain, motions to approve.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
Second.
Takesha, I have a motion and a second to approve board items 155 and 156. Can you call for the vote?
Will do, Madam President. We have a motion and a second to approve board reports 25-155 and 25-156. Commissioner Bain, how do you vote?
Aye.
Vice President Sanchez, how do you vote?
Aye.
Commissioner Tran, how do you vote?
Aye.
Commissioner Lloyd, how do you vote?
Aye.
President Cimarron, how do you vote?
Aye.
And the motion carried.
Thank you. Does any of the chairpersons of the task force have any verbal update?
Meeting after this.
Okay.
I do want to provide an update to the rest of our commissions from our last task board meeting. We received an update on the project at First and Broadway, right across from City Hall. The staff has been in communication with the Altamed Foundation to ultimately build a Chicano art museum there. And we gave approval to the staff to enter negotiations of what the site might look like before anything happened. Vice President Sanchez and I thought we wanted to keep this project moving forward, which is why we gave that direction, but have asked them to come back to the full board to really consider this project and if it's the right thing for the site.
Was there discussion in terms of, was this a long-term, is it a lease agreement?
It is a long-term lease agreement is what is currently being considered. And this was the first time that me and Vice President Sanchez have heard of anything else coming at this particular site beyond the original park designation.
Okay. So is the staff looking at bringing that as a board action or a board report or an update?
Matthew Rudnick, Executive Officer. So I believe the direction was to work on a term sheet with the organization on their proposal and to come back to the board with recommendations to proceed with potential negotiations for a longer term agreement and to also look at a shorter term use over the next 3 years for the site. So we'll be doing both of those things. I think one of the other requests was for the Altamed Foundation to come back with conceptual plans and like more kind of fully developed plans for even the more interim use for board's consideration. So it's there are a few moving parts. We actually did meet with them earlier this week as well to kind of clarify some next steps. And there are other site considerations that the board needs to take under advisement as it considers the project. So we will be coming back to the board for further kind of discussion.
Okay, thank you. Are there any requests for comments from commissioners on future agenda items or report backs within our jurisdiction?
I would like a report back on the public comment made today from TLC about the signage discussions. I'd like to understand where those are and why they stalled.
Okay.
Can you clarify that? I'm sorry.
Hongava Land Conservancy project about adding their input into our signage and displays.
And Commissioner Bain, I'm not requesting a report necessarily, but just that we do address the horse trail maintenance issues that were brought up by the public speaker around the Canoga Park. Just like to get some attention there for that.
And I would add just an update on the equestrian center, where we are in the process for the equestrian center. And then if we can look into the comment that was made regarding the billing and invoicing issues and lack of communication. Anything else? Okay, hearing nothing else, that concludes this meeting. The next meeting is scheduled for Thursday, September 18th, 2025 at 9 a.m. We'll be at the Penmar Recreation Center, 1341 Lake Street in Venice, California. We'll see everyone there. This meeting is adjourned.